At the Races with Steve Bick. Enough! Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
A very good Thursday, race fans. Sirius 219, XM 201, Sports Zone 964. If you're listening to Sirius XM online and at our website, stevebick.com. And it took a little longer than maybe expected. if you were kind of wading into Saturday's overnights and then the fields and printing PPs, Tampa. Apparently looking to fill out the challenger. I guess the challenger was the challenge. And as a result, Tampa very late getting out, but they're all assembled and we're ready, I think, to start diving in because the three major cards clearly led by Santa Anita, the Big Cap and the Kilrow and, the San Felipe. San Felipe ended up with more, I think, than anybody expected, particularly with Simon Callahan, who was kind of wavering on even, staying at home, had considered coming to New York with Roman Centurion, but threw in on the San Felipe field. And so from three-year-olds, male and female, Tampa, Aqueduct, Santa Anita, then up into the handicap division, led by the Big Cap and really by this Kilrow. The Kilrow drew, and we've been hinting at this for weeks, that there were going to be shippers, and that includes our friend Leine Seidler's Casa Creed coming out. Johnny V's going to ride. Chad tossed in with the pair from Clarovich and Judmont, Spirit Animal and Flavius. Cassie would ride a Comet, the Oxley Len Regio candy ride. And who else? There was somebody else. Pletcher, Social Paranoia. Can't forget Social Paranoia. And then, of course, the locals that have been laying in wait. Smooth Like Straight draws the rail from Michael W. McCarthy and Cannon. Hit the Road, the streaking and fast-developing Dan Blacker, More Than Ready. The two-hole, Social Paranoia. Mandela for Rick Porter and Sienna. Royal Ship, then Spirit Animal, Flavius, Casa Creed, Count Again. The Samson, they're still partnered, but the Samson Agave, Phil D'Amato purchase that moved out to the West Coast. And then Ride a Comet and Flying Scotsman, Calumet, Jack Sisterson. Out there, moving out there as well. So a field of 10, and in a lot of ways, I mean, I know that the three-year-olds are going to get more press and attention, and the Big Cap is the Big Cap, but that Kilrow is probably, right? Am I overly keyed up for that? I don't know. I think that's the best assembly, top to bottom, of the day. So the Kilrow, the Big Cap, Max Field's presence kind of ratchets up the interest and excitement. Kiss Today Goodbye back for Cruel Jack. Dale heading out, shipping out with Coastal Defense. And then some of the usual suspects, as they say, Tis a Magician, Express Train, King Guillermo, who stayed out there. I don't know. I don't know what's up on that front. Independence Hall trying to connect all the dots. I mentioned the San Felipe. Life is Good draws the rail because, it's a Baffert horse, almost has to be on the rail. Dream Shake is lining up right next door. Now, not that they have similar styles, but Dream Shake. I don't think that Peter Urton will want Rosario to, to drop completely out of it. In this setting. So Dream Shake, the two-hole, Medina Spirit, the other Baffert, Johnny V gets a board. Because Abel Cedillo sticks with Doug O'Neill and the great one. Maybe I don't know how much of it was, might have been an interesting conversation, actually. But the great one draws the five, the Robesons, and Peter Miller, none above the law, who taking a shot, the Calbred, homebred for Caracanti, for the Robesons. In the four, the great one, Governor's Party, Daniel Franco comes down from SF, and then Roman Centurion with Hernandez for Qatar and Don Alberto, the Don Alberto Empire Maker colt that just got beat by Medina Spirit in the Lewis. So this ended up, I think, even better than people had anticipated. You know, don't forget the great one, you know, coming on, and Doug kind of, you know, hinted at this and taking a shot. But Life is Good, Dream Shake, Medina Spirit, the great one, and Roman Centurion really adds to the intrigue that came together for the San Felipe. The San Carlos as well for the sprinters. And in fact, Doug surprised me there because he said before he was on the air, he said that he didn't think he was going to run anybody in the San Carlos, but then ended up putting in a Strong Constitution. But Storm the Court is going to try this spot for Peter Erton. Samantha Siegel with Extra Hope. Brickyard Ride shows up in here. Loudmouth, Steve Knapp, and so forth. So it, really a a day to look forward to. On the West Coast, and we'll put it all together in terms of timing and the way these races are all going to fit together on the afternoon. In Tampa, it's a bit of a they got a full field, but it's a there's some horses you're going to have to dig deep and figure out. Some names that are not going to be as instantly recognizable. You got a number of, you know, maiden winners that threw in here. In fact, there's Avila again with King of Dreams, broke the maiden at Gulfstream on the turf. But Candyman Rocket comes in as the major player. Mark Cassie told you the other morning that Helium was going to be intended here. Vicky Oliver comes back out of the Davis, nice closing hidden stash, run. That was all right. Bayerano gets back aboard. Had gotten chances in Kentucky, and in fact won two races with hidden stash. Intriguing. Safi Joseph jumped in. It seems like Safi's got horses everywhere, every direction. Awesome Jerry out of the Holy Bull. And Moonlight Strike as well, who tried the Smarty Jones and was beaten pretty good in there. Pletcher, pair from him as well, Unbridled Honor, maiden winner at Tampa in February, and Promise Keeper as well, broke the maiden in the slop at Gulfstream. Dale's going to try Sitting on Go in here. Out of the disappointing effort. And really now, it's been a string. Let's be honest. It's a string of disappointing efforts. So we'll see if he can't right the ship. It's a mixed bag, to say the least. Safi also has got the Super Strong in here. The third Safi Joseph runner. I forgot about him. And then the rest of this card, you got the Florida Oaks for the girls and the Hillsboro. That challenger ended up with some interesting participation. Modernist gets a four-year-old debut. Raise your hand if you had completely forgotten about Modernist. Yeah, the Y God the Why God homebred, the Uncle Mo, last seen in the Peter Pan, and of course had won the Risen Star, and then it kind of went sideways. It didn't proceed from there, as it were. You've also got a 4-year-old debut for Randy Block and Six Columns. Let Me Know. Nice to see him back. The Iowa Derby winner and then disqualified, you'll recall, to the great displeasure of Ian and consternation. Yeah. Last seen coming out of an allowance win at Churchill in November. So Let Me Know. It's nice to get these, you know, the 3-year-olds that then turn 4. You've also got an interesting horse that I think people might have forgotten about. War Stopper, who's now been with Todd Pletcher for a couple of starts, and if you recall, had a very impressive maiden breaker back last year at Aqueduct, and then tried the Gotham and got hurt, and you know was gone. Comes back here for you know another stake try. So here's another 4-year-old. I mean, this is nice, you know, for all the concern and all the, you know, let's call it what it is, disgust and frustration over horses that, you know, that quote unquote retire early. This is what you need. You need these comebackers, these former 3-year-old stake types that, you know, have a variety of marks for them, not against them. But here's 3. Modernist, Let Me Know, and War Stopper. Pretty good. There's also Last Judgment coming out of Pegasus, a non-threatening eighth in that spot for Mike Maker and Michael Dubb and Mike Caruso and Steve Hornstock. But had won the Sunshine Millions Classic before that, with a big fig. As a horse, this was one of these high-priced claims, 62.5 claim, back in the fall, and then tried the Mr. Prospector. That didn't go well, but then stretched out successfully in that restricted company opportunity. 5-year-old gelding, Last Judgment. And also there's Jungle Fighter Kerry Raven sends out, last seen at Woodbine, with Michael Doyle. Going back to last year, this is a 5-year-old now gelding, was gelded over the winter. Lightly raced 5-year-old by Animal Kingdom. So whoever in the racing office had to beat the bushes, you did okay. This is an interesting race. It goes fairly early on the card, 218 post for the Grade 3 Challenger as part of this Tampa card. And then to round things out, New York, the Gotham. Nice group, and everybody that was expected turned up, led by highly motivated, certainly, 3-year-old debut, last seen on the Breeders' Cup undercard, winning the Nyquist, and Chad and Seth Klarman. This is the Klarman homebred, too, that was bought back. And Capo Kane. And Capo Kane's presence, I think people are going to gloss over him after the Withers, but he ran fine in the Withers and cuts back to the one-turn mile configuration where, you know, he was so successful in the Jerome. So Capo Kane, he's not going to slip through the cracks, but I think he could be a little of the value. Baffert, of course, with Freedom Fighter, you know, he's going to get class tested here. He's bringing in a string of bullets. Jimmy Jerkins with Chiefswood's homebred Weyburn draws the outside. You know, there's no post issues with this one turn mile at the Big A. Chad ended up entering another horse, Crowded Trade, and maiden winner. The end of January, also Klarovich. This was the one out of that Jumpstart mare, Maud S, the More Than Ready colt. And then Kimmel with the Reds and Pletcher with Atlantic Road for Starlight. A fun group. The Tom Fool got a nice set of six in the Tom Fool, the Busher, and the Heavenly Prize. So nice. And you might have seen yesterday, once Tampa got their draw in, you might have seen that I put out the cross country pick five, an all stakes cross country pick five that is going to essentially be run in like an hour and 10 minutes. Post time 4:25, and the bottom post is 5:25. So this will be really fun. The Hillsboro, the Heavenly Prize, the Florida Oaks, the Gotham, and the Tampa Bay Derby makes up the 15% takeout, retail only, Naira Bets cross country pick five, Nick Tamaro tomorrow. One of the things that I think you're going to have to really do is figure out how you want to attack the day. And certainly, I got some contests. We got to get some contest conversation in because it's a big contest Saturday, including the first free contest from the NTRA. Five seats free, no nothing other than being a tour member. So the first of the four free contests, five seats on Saturday, and we'll watch for the for the race choices. And ExpressBet's got the ultimate betting challenge on Saturday. Plenty of opportunity there, and Naira with the Gotham challenge. So we'll get all those details in. And I should also mention, I did have an exchange with Jim Goodman this week. He's basically had a little vacation. I think Jim getting a little sun and fun in while he can, and he opens up the registration for the Grade One gamble. Opens tomorrow, and there is, and I, Jim said, let me. In fact, I really should look because I think Jim said he would be available today or tomorrow, and let me see what did he say? Yeah. Thursday or Friday. So maybe we'll slip Jim Goodman in at some point and he'll give you the details, because there is going to be some limited opportunity for those that, that are going to go to Keeneland. We also tried to reach out to Keeneland too, to get the details of seating arrangements and attendance arrangements at Keeneland. So I will reach out to Jim. All right. So lots of that. And on the and while I'm mentioning the contest, let me give you last week's five qualifiers, including our friend and Derby trailer, Jim Sebas. Unbelievable. Jim has been in a zone, he got a second seat in for 21 late in the proceedings, before, 21 qualifications ended. But now he's set for 22 as well. Congratulations to Jim. David Harrison, a regular, and certainly he's qualified plenty of times before. Jason Albano as well. GT Nixon and Bruce D'Agostino. D'Agostino, the greatly missed grocery, right? There's no more D'Agostino's in the city, right? D'Agostino's gone? I'll have to ask Andy. Andy will know. It's the Love Dags, right? Remember D'Agostino's? No? So a lot of you don't? Okay. I don't know who I'm saying didn't. There was, for those of you that have no idea, D'Agostino's was a really nice premium grocery, not schlocky. There was a D'Agostino's was nice. The black, they had the black signage and white and red and green, Italian-ish. I should really know if Dags. I don't think I'm going to say no. Where's my man Aaron? You go to Aaron will know. Aaron's too busy getting the the kosher for Passover materials on the shelf. I did see that. Yeah, I was where was I in Saratoga this week yesterday, and Passover looming large. So anyway, we got plenty to do today. And oh, wait a minute, here's an important Freddie Moe. Thank you, Freddie. Dags. Freddie says that Dags is still. Is still with us. Thank you, Freddie. It's nice to know Freddie is still with us. It's 9:20, so I think the Gilbies is it's not yeah, the Sapphire not cracked that yet. It's a little early. thank you, Freddie. In a jovial mood here. A couple of things to set up shop for today. Dick Powell. I think we'll have Dick in first. Casey, let's get Dick in number one today. You know, yesterday, I don't know if you, Freddie says it's a bit early even for him. Godolphin yesterday, I'm going to see what Dick's thoughts were. Godolphin won that European, you know, the Euro Road to the Derby race yesterday. So Highland Avenue with Holly Doyle. And, it, you know, this was the Road to the Derby conditional stakes, some of the sequence of point races that continue. That was at Kempton yesterday. So Godolphin just, wow, are they in a zone? Clicking along. So we'll talk to Dick, and we'll get some HK in as well. I had something else for Dick, too, something else internationally, international base. So we'll talk to him momentarily. And Tony Black, a little bit early today, because we got a pair of conversations with Tony. We had already established that Tony was going to weigh in. that's a foreshadowing. Tony was going to offer his thoughts on the Paco Irad situation and, you know, how to handle this. And, you know, he'll provide his decades of experience on that front. But then when I say weigh in, the story that I mentioned the other morning, was it Tuesday, when we really didn't have much detail about the Alexander Crispin suspension and fine, and pretty much brought it up to juxtapose him getting fined $1,000 and Irad being fined $1,000 for the fight. Now there's more detail, and there's still it's still not, you know, every I has not been dotted and every T hasn't been crossed on this, but this is not a nice reflection. Crispin and his lawyer, they have nothing to say, and Maryland officials, the regulators, there's only certain things they can say, but essentially they had some hints earlier in the winter and concerns that Crispin was, you know, weighing in after races lighter than he had gone out. And Tony will talk about, you know, some of the potentially nefarious methods of the weight, playing games with weight. But this one now has got specific, you know, video evidence. It wasn't just a case of, you know, maybe a, you know, we suggested the other morning, maybe a weight pad, a lead came out. I mean, that, you know, that can happen inadvertently. This does not appear by any stretch to be inadvertent. And I know some people seem to have reacted to this saying, we don't take it seriously. Obviously the stewards were taking it seriously because they had got wind of it. They warned Crispin They said they brought him in January and said that, you know, we're hearing that, you know, somehow you're weighing in under the, you know, the number you're going out. And then they got video evidence. You know, they set up the video system because the scale had been moved as part of protocols for COVID. And so when they, you know, when they were watching the video, they pretty much, you know, saw the numbers, 5 pounds. And Frank Simule is the one who caught it and reached out to State Steward Adam Campola. So, you know, until Crispin and or the attorney, because they would not disclose anything. So 30 days at $1,000, and you know, this is a kid that won the Eclipse for apprentice rider this year, and does not reflect well. So Tony's going to talk about, you know, this is an area that doesn't get a lot of attention, you know, other than the discussion of handicap weights. I mean, we don't, and as I mentioned on Tuesday, the last time I remember anything coming up on this topic was that time that, and I knew it was one of the Charlie Brown horses that in the Belmont, Uptown Charlie Brown. And he had had an 8 pound lead slide out from the back of the pad. And it was, I mean, that one was, you know, simply an unfortunate circumstance. And it actually cost Uptown Charlie Brown, you know, the last significant check in a big race. But that's that one was inadvertent. So Tony's going to give you insights, and he's got, let's see, he's got 50 years of experience on this topic. And while we're talking about jocks, I don't know if you saw this yesterday, because Gary Stevens himself actually let out the news that his brother Scott, who we last talked to when he won the George Wolfe a couple of years ago, which was so nice. And in fact, we had Gary and Scott on together. Should really, Casey, we should pull that out. He went down and has got a vertebrae fracture, and at the age of 60, and after over 5,000 wins, one of Tony's brethren that's won over 5,000 races. And in fact, he looks like, yeah, he's actually just shy of Tony. Scott Stevens, 5,049 wins and $43 million, one of 35 race riders in North American racing history to win over 5,000 races. You'll hear from another of those, Tony Black, on these rider topics, jockey fights and jockey weight. So plenty of fodder for Tony. Steve Haskin later, and I want to get Seth in. He's on the air shortly, but we'll get Seth in. I couldn't get to him yesterday. We'll see if he's got some early thoughts on Tampa, and we'll get Rich Eng in as well. So busy docket again today, day after day. I think I hear Dick Powell. Good morning.
You there?
Yeah, I just said hello.
Okay. Yeah.
Dick, let's see. Any thoughts? I do frequently throw administrative kinds of things at you and regulator topics. This is a kettle of fish.
Yeah. It's real bad and should be severe punishment. It's not anything. Oops. Not one of those.
Nope, doesn't seem like it. Does not appear like it.
And you know, you got that, you got the IRAD Paco, and my thing with IRAD is, man, you gotta get back in the gym, son, because if you get three wide open shots like that, and the guy's still sitting there.
That's not nice. those
punches don't have much behind them. And Gordon Elliott. I have two words for Gordon Elliott. Ask him. I'll be banned for life. And I'm really dying to see what the Brits do about this guy. You know, yeah. they're always, you know, the hand wringing that goes on with them and all this and that. They're the leaders, integrity, and everything. Well, let's see. Let's see what you're going to do. I await that. I don't understand the investigation. They have a picture. He said he did it. Kind of like end of story. So now it's what's the punishment going to be? So, yeah. These are the type administrative things that I do.
Yeah.
Thumbs up, thumbs down, thumbs sideways, thumbs down.
There's never a shortage. I'll tell you that. It's a steady parade, Dick. But listen, that right? Isn't that that's the. It's true of anything. We have a tendency, I sometimes mirthfully say, oh, only in racing. People have that, you know, that sensibility to some extent, but it's not. You get these on and off the field issues with any. Whether it's a sport endeavor or anything else. I mean, it's not human behavior.
Well, I'll be curious to hear what Tony has to say, because it'll be interesting to see what the apprentice rider, what video evidence they have, and did he act alone?
Well, there's different places along the way that this can, intervening parties, as it were.
Yeah. Now, quick sidebar.
Yep.
Monday, March 8th, 2021, 50 years ago, greatest sporting event ever. Tide of the century.
Ooh.
Which, now this, if you ever needed to have an example of why Dick is a moron, in my office, I have the original fight program for Muhammad Ali, Joe Frazier. First fight. I had the first two fights. I didn't go to Manila. But I have the program here. I moved it because I didn't want the sun getting on it, and I'll be damned if I can find the program.
It's
probably within arm's reach. It's definitely here, but it was the most exciting event I've ever gone to. Nothing even close. 20,000 people in Madison Square Garden. At least two people died of heart attacks during the fight.
How about that? I never heard that before.
It was in some of the papers the next day, but there was so much coverage. I don't think I can ever remember a sporting event having the coverage that fight had before and afterwards. And before was one commercial after another that Muhammad and Joe did together. I mean, they were on constantly. And then you get to the fight, and I had seats. I used to scalp tickets. So I would go up, buy seats for Nick playoff games, things like that. Go up middle of the night, get online, wait till 10 o'clock the next morning, buy seats, sell them. Well, this one I wasn't going to sell. So I'm in the blue seat, and I have binoculars. I don't even remember the first round because I couldn't get my hands to stop shaking. It was just, it's indescribable.
I love it.
Fantastic. So the 50th anniversary is Monday. And amazingly, this summer, I'm out to dinner with Nick Cito. Nick's in the parking lot. I go over, park my car, walk over. He's on the phone. He hands me the phone. Here. Jerry Eisenberg.
Hmm.
Jerry, I grew up in Staten Island. You were in the Staten Island Advance, you know, every column. You know, we got the New York papers, but we also had the Staten Island Advance delivered in the afternoon, and that was part of the Newark Star Ledger syndication. So I got to read Jerry my entire life. And I said, when you were down in the press row covering Ollie Fraser, I was way up in the blue seats watching it. So we were there at the same time. And Jerry lives in Las Vegas and is 90 years old and is writing his first novel. Not a sports book, about the, it's kind of like a love story set during the Newark riots in 1964. You know, when you hear Jerry talk about it, I've heard him interviewed a couple of times, and it's very interesting. The guy is sharp as a tack, and had
he's
been
amazing.
To all, you know, Jerry, yep. Jerry was there. Jerry had all these events, covered them as big as anybody else was. So, yeah, Monday is the 50th anniversary.
And interestingly, it just so happens that, I mean, the fight was Monday, March 8th, and it's a Monday, March 8th, the way things fall this year as well. And I mean, I was young. I was 12 years old, but I certainly remember, you know, the hubbub and the aftermath, and, you know, and then what came later. No, I'm glad you mentioned that, because it's going to be a busy race weekend, and you know, by Monday, that might get lost. I'm sure there'll be a ton of, you know, media build up this weekend. And, you know, there's links to all kinds of links to, you can watch the whole fight these days on YouTube and more. So
yep.
I remember, you know, one tidbit I do remember is that Sinatra took, worked it as a photographer.
He was Life Magazine's photographer,
yep,
for the fight. And the TV coverage, which I did not see having been there, but have seen on YouTube later, was Don Dunphy, Burt Lancaster.
Burt Lancaster was invited. That's right. That's funny that's an obscurity from the closed circuit thing. Yeah.
And I can't remember the third person, but as long as you had Don Dunphy was the king of boxing commentators, the absolute best. Scorsese does Raging Bull. Thank God Don Dunphy was still alive, so you have his voice and stuff like that. You know, just Don Dunphy was every fight, especially, well, way back then, every fight was in Madison Square Garden. Why did it leave? Why did suddenly we, the mecca of boxing, suddenly lose everything to Atlantic City and Las Vegas? Taxes. We taxed the boxing industry out of New York.
Hmm.
So these public policy issues that seem not terribly important. What New York State decided to do was that if you were, obviously the purse that night was $2.5 million for each fighter. And they then were starting to make money with the final cut. And New York State decided that's all New York taxable income and we want our share. And basically Las Vegas had grown big enough and Atlantic City had some, you know, a convention center, things like that. So that was Bye Bye Boxing in New York. it didn't take long. It was probably within 5 years that New York had lost all these big fights.
Huh. That sidebar, I hadn't really connected those dots. I mean, it's not long thereafter either that you had the casinos in Connecticut by the end of the decade, too, I think, started to get them.
Yeah, and where they really exposed themselves was that you're in New York. You have the media capital world. You have everything, infrastructure, everything in place. Well, then with technology, you can do it in the parking lot of Caesar's Palace in Las Vegas. You know, you can put up temporary seating and a ring and lighting and satellites and everything else. So now it doesn't necessarily have to be there, as great as it is when it's there. And so therefore, when New York State started grabbing that share, they just packed up and left.
Well, I'm putting up the poster and a great photo of Frazier landing a left, and we'll see. I'm sure it'll trigger some things from people. Interesting that given your attendance at racing events around the world over a long stretch that this. You know, this outstrips any of those, including Melbourne Cups and Triple yeah. Crown events and more. So that's saying something, Dick.
It's hair standing on your arms, hands are shaking. You cannot believe they are in the ring because the backstory of getting them into the ring and Ali not being allowed to fight for over 3 years, and even the Supreme Court
right.
to weigh in and grant him a license, and coming back and having a fight in Georgia, and then suddenly Ali Frazier is here. You know, Joe meantime was undefeated, was going through everything, and then the way the marketing was done and it got very ugly, it got very racial, and I mean to call Joe the names that Joe was called, I don't know how you could be any more black than Joe Frazier, and yet he was the white man's champion, you know, and he was going to do this, and it was really unnecessary because the fight was sold out. You didn't need to do that, and Muhammad had a dark side to him, and he showed it in Manila. And, I loved the guy, but he had a dark side to him, and so it was serious. You know, him against Joe. Joe wound up in the hospital for weeks, and every day afterwards there were stories, and there was a story that Joe had died.
I remember that.
So it's just historically and culturally and sociologically and everything else, that is pretty hard to tap.
Thanks for that aside. I'm anxious to see what people, who else might, 50 years, how many... You know, it'd be interesting to see how many other people were there, and I'm glad you talked about Jerry and his book. I have to check in with Jerry Eisenberg. Over the years, I've only had him on 2-3 times, and I should be more, because he is a treasure, an absolute treasure.
Yeah.
Really, I'm glad you mentioned. Deck, let's get a couple of.
There was a great commercial leading up to the fight. I don't remember the product. And Ali is there with Joe, and he says, "This is going to shock and amaze ya. Muhammad Ali is going to beat Joe Frazier." That was just fantastic. So, yes.
Love it. Dick, let's do a roundup here. And I mentioned as you were joining us, I wanted to slip in that Road to the Derby, Euro points. We talked about last week about the Japanese runner who doesn't appear intended. But here's Godolphin with another interesting product. I don't know, you know, the long term plans for this one, but everywhere you look, I had Jimmy Bell on Monday because that was such a remarkable achievement for them on over the weekend on Saturday with the 3 stake wins.
Yes, handicap, 3 rolls. This one, Highland Avenue. All starts have been on all weather. He's not an original Triple Crown nominee, but that's no big deal. That's $6,000. So if they decided to go, he clearly could. I don't know how they want to do that with the other two, Essential Quality and Proxy. So what was interesting was Holly Doyle won the race, and it was part of a 5-race streak she had yesterday on the all-weather track. Holly killing it. Just had a phenomenal year last year. She wins the race in Hong Kong. Set, you know, history there. Then goes to Saudi. Did great in the Jockey Challenge. Then wins the race on the day of the Saudi Cup. And just riding was fantastic. And when you see Holly ride, I think people are a little bit surprised because she is incredibly athletic in the sense of her strength, her lower body strength. It's just off the charts. So she's like this boxer almost on a horse and strong as could be, and her balance is just fantastic, going short, going long. So she has the ride on Highland Avenue, at least she did the other day. And I don't know what their plans are, but they have lots of good things to plan because they have, you know, they got Maxfield going to the big cap, and they have the horse who won
Mystic Guy,
the Arkansas race. Yeah, he's gone to the Dubai World Cup, and just they got the two top coats for Kentucky Derby this year. Many of them are homebreds. Many of them are by their sires, although with Central Quality is by Tappet. But the others are street hens and horses like that. They owned and developed and stuff like that. So, yeah, the Royal Blue, including this afternoon, if we have Dubai Racing, today is Super Thursday, all prep races for the upcoming Dubai World Cup in 3 weeks. So, You'll see some Godolphin Blue this morning. But you've been seeing them all over America, and I like the plan that they have now. And I read an interview with Mike Stidham saying, when we get the two-year-olds, we haven't seen them. They get assigned to us, and it's all working. You know, no one's going to a farm and picking out, oh, I want this one, I want this one.
Yeah.
Someone's making those decisions for them, and the horses are staying in America with the American trainers, and they're very much bred for dirt. So they're seeing all systems go for the goal for the first Saturday night.
It does. You do get the sense that their operation is. I don't want efficient is probably not the right word, but it does feel like, after a lot of trial and error that they've really struck on a better approach. And, it also feels like there's less, to pull an appropriate Yiddish term, interfumfering. having interference from above, reaching down and trying to manipulate, and they're letting everybody go forward. It seems like it's paying off pretty well.
Yeah, and it's a recognition of the the previous way wasn't working, number one. But it's also recognition of how different American dirt racing is. And that if you're going to succeed in American dirt racing, you have to be training and having people associated with American dirt racing and pedigrees and people and tracks and training centers and things like that. It's just, it's not something you're able to do elsewhere and then show up and try to take down a big prize. So the sires that the Dolphin have developed are very good dirt sires. And that's been a big help for them. And so they have a depth, and a lot of these dams have depth of quality in dirt racing over here. And they've just done a spectacular job managing that. But I wish they could have done what they did. You know, he wanted to do it his way and take the horses to Dubai and winter them in Dubai, and then from there go out and take on the classics and everything. And you know, it just didn't work for the Kentucky Derby. I was rooting for them, but it worked on the plan B. And he's doing pretty good.
We'll watch and see what's next. Highland Avenue and really starting to pile up the quality types. And we're still waiting to see how Brendan Walsh able to get, you know, get him back rolling after missing a little bit of time. And you know, he had been hopefully pointing for the fountain. But I did see he worked the other day, actually. So he's back on the work tab. So that goes a long way toward getting him a shot. We talked to Brendan last week. I did see Extravagant Kid is going to the Alquaz sprint. I saw that overnight. Dick, let's get some HK in as well.
Okay, well, we're back at Shot 10 last Sunday. Some really good performances. No stake races, and I'll talk about that regarding yesterday's races. But a very fast Class 2 7-furlong race that Highly Proactive won. 121.12, super quick. And then a horse named Vincy, V-I-N-C-Y, who had been 0-27 lifetime, but is a solid Class 3 horse. He just doesn't win, but he's always there, and he's maintained a very good rating. Well, he wound up winning a Class 3 handicap in very fast time, Milo Nathan, 46.63. He now has over $300,000-something in earnings, in U.S. dollars. So it's nice to see him win, but he's certainly carrying his own weight. Yesterday, Joe was suspended, and he will be again this coming Saturday. Zach wound up winning 5 races, which, we're getting close. Well, not really. Joe has 95 wins. Zach has 70. Karis Tiedma, 40. I mean, this is a really strange jock race. I mean, to have Joe go out and dominate, okay, we've seen it before. But to have this gigantic gap between, you know, Joe has more than twice as many wins as the third jock. That's pretty unusual. That's, you know, 50-something cards into the season. So Zach had a nice day at 4 in a row. Interesting yesterday, Steve, every race had a full field. So Happy Valley runs 12, and every race had 12 starters. Total handle yesterday was a seasonal high for Happy Valley, 1.476 billion. Hong Kong dollars. It's just some, you know, divide that by about 7 and get American dollars. But just relative to what they normally do, 1.35 or so, it just shows that field size, when you have many of your other factors kind of leveled out, then field size becomes just super important. And you'll see it coming up when they have their big stake races, or you see it a couple weeks ago when they had the big stake races. Betting handle does not necessarily go up, because sometimes you get an 8 or 9 horse field, and then in Shot 10 you can run 14 horses and you're not getting 14 every race, where Happy Valley, not that many stake races are run, so they consistently get 12. So the betting yesterday for the nine races was just enormous on what they like to call the shitty track. So Zach had a nice day. He can have another nice day Saturday night, Sunday morning. But Joe will be back. The stewards are still handing out suspension, which they're very consistent. And you break the rules, you're going to get set down for a couple of days. You're going to get fined. You're going to miss a lot of business. So most of the riders try to follow the rules. But that's a look back, looking forward. Sunday, first post, midnight Eastern time, like 9 p.m. Saturday night, Pacific time. We have 10 races, 3 on the all-weather, 7 on the turf. Give you a couple of picks to watch. Race 1, we're going to go 1,200 meters. These are 0 to 40, class 5. This is the bottom group. But number 8, Vital Spring, has just been remarkably consistent. Last 3 races have all been solid, finishes races real well, draws the 9, going 1,200, and I wish I was a little bit inside, but he's a closer. And I really like the sire here, Per Encanto. I did a story on him. He was a Shadwell Group 3 Stakes winner in Italy. And somehow he landed in New Zealand, and with Shadwell's support, he was a terrific stallion down under. And down under often means a lot of those horses are going to show up in Hong Kong. So Per Encanto is the sire of number 8, Vital Spring, who we like in race number 1. Then we're going to go to race number 6. 6 is a class 4, 1,400 meters sprint. I like number 8, Oscar Glory. Had 2 starts. First start was on the old weather. Didn't really do much. Then tried turf last time out. Broke from the 10 hole going the same distance. The 14 won the race, Wukan. Oscar Glory got a nice trip sitting inside. Didn't have the biggest punch. I'm hoping second start over the turf, third start, lifetime. Coming back in 2 weeks rest from a better post. We don't have to improve much to be right there in the fight for this one. The Frankie Lord trains Karis Keaton is going to ride this on the Per Encanto. And then race number 9 is a class 3. We're going to go 1,600 meters, metric mile, but remember, shot 10, it's a one-turn race. So we're just going to go around the one right-hand turn. Along with Zach Purton here, the highweight number 1 Flagship Glory, had a real good record overseas, now is in Hong Kong. First race, rallied from off the pace. Third, last race, rallied from pretty far off the pace, past a ton of horses in the stretch, missed by a head. We draw well, we add the hood. Joe was supposed to ride, Joe suspended, Zach picks up the mount. And does have to tote high weight, but off the last couple of races, I think he can handle it. So that's number 1, Flagship Glory, in race number 9, which, based on my past performances, I'll probably be awake and turn on the iPad. I did that one night, and the Australian Open was already over. Novak Djokovic had gone through straight sets. They were doing the trophy presentation when I woke up to watch the 9th race. So.
Nice. I appreciate it, Dick. And things heating up really all over the place. Around the
world. You know, it really is. And I don't know where January and February went, but all of a sudden we're in March, and now you're starting to, and it's like, wait a minute, from March Madness and the Masters and the Kentucky Derby. It's like, whoa. This is prime time, so yeah, it's good.
Well, I know you're not a Twitter guy, but take a look, and we're getting responses already, and including a wonderful. I'm going to read this as we go to the break, because I'm tickled. Andrew Cohen, who is a wonderful follow, and that is written for The Atlantic and reports for CBS News and more. And he loves racing, and he loves sport. But he used the tweet. I said, Dick Powell, reminding that Monday is the 50th anniversary. He was there and says that no other sporting event eclipses it for him. And he's been to the biggest races all over the world for decades. Andrew Cohen subtweets it and has a Larry Merchant quote. Muhammad Ali fought a truth machine last night, and the truth that emerged was painfully clear. Pretty good line from Larry Merchant. And in fact, he's got the link to the Merchant's piece in The Atlantic from November. This is an article from November of 10 years ago, November 2011, that Andrew wrote. And so I'll retweet that, and I want to read this when I get a chance. So that was coming up on the 40th anniversary.
Yep.
Good deal. Good job, Dick. I love it.
Yeah. Thanks, Steve.
Talk to you soon. Let's take the top of the hour break. Tony Black, I've got to get Tony in here because Tony's got twin topics. We've got the Paco Irad fisticuffs, speaking of fights of the century. That was not a fight of the century. Neither topic is amusing, frankly. The missing 5 pounds off of Alexander Crispin. You'll get insight